Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, proudly presented by Butler Snow, where we cover topics of interest to lawyers handling appellate matters in Texas courts and beyond. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Jody Sanders.
And I'm Todd Smith.
And our guest today is Javeria Khan, who's one of the founders of the Appellate Project. And we're going to talk a lot more in a few minutes about what the Appellate Project does. But a few of our listeners that I know personally are involved in the Appellate Project as mentors right now. And I'm hoping that a lot more of our listeners will get involved. So write the Appellate Project down and listen to our episode. And hopefully you'll find out some ways that you can get involved with that. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, just as we get started, can you kind of just tell us a little bit about your background and who you are and how you got to be doing what you're doing now?
Sure. So I'm a lawyer by background. I grew up not knowing any lawyers, but really got interested in the law as a kid during 9/11 and experiencing a lot of the pushback in our Muslim community after that happened. And, you know, really getting curious about who was creating these laws and whether they had met anyone from my community. That sort of led to a broader interest in learning about civil rights and how marginalized communities have used the courts throughout history to build a foundation of many of the rights that I do have. So I followed that interest into law school, knowing I wanted to do work in that space, but unsure how to get there. We can kind of get into this more later on, but you know, a lot of law school was being uncertain about how to get to A to B. And so I did eventually end up doing what I wanted to do, which was impact litigation. And it was while doing that work that I got my first meaningful exposure to appellate work. And, you know, just jumping ahead, that's what led to the creation of the Appellate Project.
You know, we've talked on this show before with a lot of guests, and I think one thing that we all acknowledge and agree on is the law in general and appellate practice in particular suffers from a lack of diversity. And it's something that I know has improved over the years and people are really making conscious efforts, but it's still in appellate practice in particular is a problem that needs to continue to be addressed in a very aggressive way. Is that something that you kind of saw both from your personal experiences, but also did you kind of recognize it from talking to other people?
Yeah, exactly. Both of those. So from my own experience, I went through law school not knowing anything about appellate work or what it was. I certainly never thought of it as a career option. Like I said, it wasn't until years into practice that I sort of had that understanding. And that means that I missed out on all the steps you should take to sort of position yourself early on for those opportunities. And that's certainly not unique to me. I share my story as an example. I did well in law school, but didn't know about clerkships until a year after graduating. I went to a networking event and an attorney came up to me. We started talking. He asked me what law school I went to, what my grades were. And his next question was, why didn't you clerk? And my immediate response was, well, it's not for people like me. And he said, what do you mean by that? And I immediately had this picture of law school and the students who, you know, always knew how to navigate those spaces. They came in with the networks and the knowledge. They would have the conversations like, well, I'll just go work at so-and-so firm because that's where my dad works. Or, well, so-and-so in my family or network is a judge, so I can just go there. And clerking felt like one more of those mysterious obstacles that I just didn't know how to navigate. And all of the students I was thinking of, you know, they were all white and I just didn't see anyone like me doing that. And I shared that with him and he very kindly, you know, walked me through the importance of a clerkship, what it meant for my career. He asked me what I wanted to do and told me how much it would help to have a clerkship to do that work. And that made all the difference. And so I just give that as one example. I think with, you know, clerkships being a stepping stone for appellate work, appellate clerkships are a key part of that too. And, you know, I think when they're messaged in law school, especially to students of color, it's often, well, those are really hard to get, don't even bother applying. And so a lot of students self-select out if they don't have that type of encouragement. So, you know, the appellate bar, or appellate work, I should say, just kind of taking a step back, you don't know what you don't know. So I think in the first instance, it's very important to communicate to students that appellate work is an opportunity, explaining clearly what the steps are. Right now, if it is messaged at all, it's as this elite area of practice that is very difficult to access, which, you know, I think when students who are students of color, first generation, who are coming from communities where they don't know lawyers, when that's all you hear and you don't see anyone who looks like you in that space, it doesn't feel accessible. So all of that kind of goes into why there aren't more students early on who are setting themselves up for these opportunities.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, because as practicing lawyers, we think about diversity initiatives as really starting with the law firms. And how do we get, how do we increase diversity in appellate practice within the firms or other practice settings? I'm not sure that we think about it as much, you know, originating all the way back to when the students are in law school. And so the suggestion, I think, is that the law schools themselves have a lot to contribute, an initiative to enhance diversity among appellate lawyers across the board.
Yeah, I can see happening is that, you know, different parties kind of point the finger at each other. So the firms will say, well, we take the students who come out of the clerkships, and this is the clerkship pool. And the judges will say, you know, here's the students who get referred to ODEST by the professors in the law schools. Every step of that is so important. So definitely for law schools to communicate to students about appellate work and what it is, and just, you know, making clear the steps students should take to set themselves up, why this work is so important, why it's so important that we have diverse representation in these spaces. For judges too, to think about, you know, where they are getting their referrals from, what that pool looks like. Are you missing out on very qualified candidates by sort of going to the same networks that you often do? I think with appellate work, you often see it's a handful of students at a handful of law schools who are connected in the right networks where they get those referrals. If you're a student of color who's first generation and not plugged into those communities, you're at a huge disadvantage, but you could be amazing at this work. And we are all missing out on those students when we don't sort of expand where we're recruiting from. And I guess I would just say, you know, for folks who are in the appellate bar, it's also immensely valuable to just get involved with students too and be part of that outreach. You know, our mentorship program, for example, one thing I've seen that's so valuable is just students feeling seen and encouraged by someone who is an appellate attorney, telling them, yes, you can do this. That makes a huge difference, especially if you catch a student early on. So there's sort of all different ways in which this plays out.
Westlaw Edge is the standard for legal research, bringing together a legacy of quality and accurate legal research and the latest advancements in technology. First-of-its-kind features like the next generation of legal search, intelligent document analysis, integrated litigation analytics, and the most powerful citator expedite research tasks that were once incredibly complex and time-consuming. Westlaw Edge allows attorneys to deliver the fastest answers and gain the most valuable insights, providing a clear strategic advantage. Be a better attorney, make your firm better, and serve your clients better than you have before with Westlaw Edge.
You know, in the greater societal context, and I think in the law in general, we see, I mean, it requires hard conversations and it requires intentionality to address this problem. And unfortunately, a lot of lawyers have a hard time having these hard conversations internally. And so it really does require, I think, self-reflection and systemic reflection to be able to address these issues. And, you know, lawyers don't like to be told that we're wrong. And so I know, you know, having conversations with lots of people about this issue, you really do have to kind of let your guard down and just be okay with being uncomfortable having these conversations about why are we missing out on these opportunities? You know, is it something we are doing, something we're not doing, a combination of both? And how can we address these barriers internally? Because I think that a lot of that, you have to have those conversations to be able to recognize and then address the problem.
Absolutely. It's an ongoing process. I'm constantly reflecting on myself and challenging myself to think about where my blind spots are and where I need to improve. And I think that's a journey that everyone goes on and it kind of never ends, to your point.
Yeah, I think a lot of law firms have created diversity initiatives and some of them are doing it, you know, for the right reasons, that we really do need to have the bar and the appellate bar specifically be a more accurate representation of the population of lawyers at large. Another motivator to that is it's sort of client driven too, because in-house counsel, I think there are a lot of initiatives to make sure that the law firms that certain companies are hiring to do their work actually have meaningful diversity initiatives and not, you know, just something that exists on paper. You know, that's a perfectly good reason for change. I suppose it helps to drive it along. But it's a reality in the marketplace, which I think is something that the Appellate Project and that other movements have going for them, is that the folks who control the dollars are sitting up and taking notice of the shortcoming in our system. And it's encouraging to see, you know, that kind of attention being paid to it. But when you look at the numbers, you still realize, I think, how far we have to go to really make the kind of meaningful impact that ought to be made.
Absolutely. And on the numbers front, I shared these statistics during our launch event in September. So these are pulled from the Federal Judicial Center. You know, just kind of taking a step back before I get into these, when you think about appellate lawyers, they have this enormous responsibility where they are shaping arguments, they are presenting the facts. These are matters of law. There are no juries. So you have, it's an immense privilege to be able to do that work and be part of that deliberative process of deciding what these laws mean. And not infrequently, those attorneys become the judges and go on to other prestigious positions where they're deciding policy as well. So, you know, I often get asked, how bad is the problem? And, you know, one of the issues is there isn't much data collected on racial diversity in these spaces, but the Federal Judicial Center does collect data on all of the judges who've been on the bench on the federal side. And so I looked at the 882 judges, this is as of September at our launch event, who have been federal appellate judges. So just to give you some sense of what this looks like, of those 882 judges, only 39 have been Black. Less than 1% have been Black women. Roughly 7% of the US population right now is Black women, but we have approximately 1.6% of the appellate bench that consists of Black women. Those 882 judges, only 22 have been Hispanic. Only 6 have been Hispanic women, and that includes Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Of those 882, only 15 of those judges have been Asian American Pacific Islander. Only 2 of those have been women. And there has never, in all of those 882 judges, been a Native American man or woman on the federal appellate bench. So those numbers to me just highlight what we're talking about. How can you, you know, we're talking about equal justice under law, having those diverse lived experiences and perspectives, it strengthens our entire system when we have that. We need to have those voices and, you know, people in the room to reach the most just and fair decisions on these issues.
Well, and that is one of the things that I think is always important to reiterate is what we are missing out, because I think a lot of people think about diversity and see it as, okay, well, you know, we need to do this because it's the right thing to do. And that's great, but that's only part of it, because you really are not thinking about what you're missing out. And you're missing out, you know, like you said, lived experiences, perspectives. You're missing out people who can reach out to communities that are underrepresented. I mean, it's an access to justice issue. It's a perspective issue. Frankly, it's a way to address and rethink the paradigms of practicing appellate law in general. You know, as you said, there have always been sort of these barrier requirements to the entry of appellate practice. And I mean, I think it's a fair question. Do those make sense? Do they really make sense? How should we think about this moving forward? Is it something we need to reevaluate? And all of these things aren't conversations that we can have unless we have all the stakeholders at the table. And to your point, we certainly haven't been in the past.
And it also goes to the idea of public trust in these institutions. When communities of color who are so impacted by these courts again and again don't see anyone who looks like them in these spaces, it just erodes trust. And that's a big problem for all of us.
Particularly in the criminal justice space, where you have overrepresentation of communities, you know, on one side of it and underrepresentation, it's hard, I would think, to feel that you're getting a fair shake in the justice system if none of the people who are making the decisions look like you, but so many of the people who are on the other side do.
Absolutely. I'm curious for you guys as practitioners, what you've seen as some of the challenges or barriers when it comes to this issue in the Texas appellate bar.
I think part of it is just historical. You know, I don't know what Texas's diversity numbers look like. I don't know that we keep those statistics in the same way that we would, that the federal center doesn't. Probably it's not necessarily feasible because I think our appellate judiciary turns over a lot more here. But just anecdotally, I would say that our numbers are probably in line with that. I mean, I think there's been an increase in those numbers in the last few years, and we certainly know people on the bench, you know, where there is diversity, but it's definitely something that trending in the right direction, but has been moving slowly. And a lot of it has to do with the fact probably that, you know, every state judge in Texas from the Supreme Court down to the Justice of Peace is elected. And so it's difficult, I think, to institute diversity when it's not really, I mean, the governor does have an appointment power, but the appointment power is backed up then by an election. And so, you know, the grounds that people are voting for judges on vary wildly. And it's hard to have any sort of diversity initiative when really the power ultimately rests with the voters and may or may not have anything to do with that kind of thing. So I think that's part of it. And I think part of it really has been in Texas that the appellate community has been very small and insular and have really in the last few years only, you know, started to grow. We do now have, I think, and in the last few decades, a pretty robust appellate practice section in the state bar, but that really only started in about the 1980s. And it was a very small group of practitioners that kind of created it, and it has now grown. But, you know, I think as you've probably seen, that's a pretty short timeline to develop and grow appellate practice in Texas the way that it has. And so I think that people are making the right moves in that space, but it just takes time. And I think part of it really comes down to, you know, there are still a lot of lawyers who have been practicing for a very long time that may not see it as an issue, or just this is the way we've always done things, so why would we change it now? I think it's probably all of those things.
Yeah, the electoral politics element of it makes it really difficult to have any kind of overarching initiative. You know, you have to really take it down to sort of grassroots level and encourage diverse candidates to run for those benches. And I will say that, you know, the governor, when he does have the appointment power, he has not hesitated to appoint females and minority candidates to those positions, and they have tended to do well. And so I think, you know, there is, to the extent that there's some greater institutional movement that can help to increase diversity, I think that is happening. But it's correct that the electoral politics element of it, you know, makes it difficult to have any sort of organized movement toward it. But at the same time, you know, you still have to have candidates that folks perceive to be qualified. That doesn't always happen. It doesn't matter what the demographic of the candidates are. I mean, judicial politics in play, there are folks who are going to get on the ballot who aren't necessarily qualified, no matter what their circumstances. But I think, you know, the local parties, actually, the political parties can have an impact on this by trying to advance diverse candidates in the primaries and in the general elections to the extent, you know, politics, it's difficult to maneuver the political system when it comes to judicial politics. But I do see some progress being made there. I think from a broader perspective, you know, we're going to be playing catch up, I think, for quite a long time, because we don't have, you described, Javeria, the situation in law schools with, you know, especially among first gen minority lawyers, they just don't know about the system and the institutions. And so that's one reason why I asked the question about law schools. I mean, the law schools really are the place where this whole idea of what is it to be an appellate practitioner or an appellate judge, and what do you have to do to connect the dots between point A and point B, that's where that discussion has to start taking place in a very outward, front and center kind of way. Because by doing that, you know, eventually I think you will see the kind of broader change that we're talking about needing to happen in the system. But I just don't know that the law schools have really done enough to advance that cause. And now that I think they're starting to catch up, you know, there are things that can be done at the other levels. You know, the judges can hire more diverse candidates. The law firms can hire diverse candidates. And we mentioned too, you know, dealing with it from the client level, you know, wanting the firms to implement a diversity initiative. All those things together, I think, can make a significant impact. But, you know, when I think about the way you described your own experience, it really highlighted for me that the law schools is really where the push for this needs to begin. And then I think eventually, with all support of all the other elements of the institutions, you know, I think we have a good chance of getting at least to a much, much better place than where we are right now.
Let's transition over to the Appellate Project itself, because we haven't really talked about it much. But how did you kind of come up with the idea of the Appellate Project, and how did it get started?
Yeah, so like I was saying earlier, it took me a few years into my career before I started to meaningfully understand and get exposed to appellate practice. And that was primarily when I started doing impact litigation. And what struck me most was the lack of diversity, especially racial diversity, in those appellate spaces. So as an impact litigator, before you bring your case, you're thinking about what's going to happen on appeal in that case, and you know how it might impact other cases, and 10 steps down the road, and you're looking at all the other appellate cases to see how they might impact what you're doing, and vice versa. And so those cases so often disproportionately impact communities of color, but I would so rarely see an attorney of color who was leading the case, certainly not arguing the case, on the bench. And again, like I was saying earlier, the fact that those attorneys not infrequently become, you know, end up becoming the judges, just thinking about that void and how palpable it was in the way the law was being shaped, the conversations that were being had behind the scenes, the law that's being produced. Because appellate courts decide matters of law, you have to have those diverse voices and perspectives and lived experiences in those rooms to reach the most informed decision. I am a Muslim woman, daughter of immigrants from rural Arizona. All of that shaped how I view the world, but it's not the only perspective. And I think each of us would have a different perspective. And that's great. We should all bring that into the room in these conversations. And I started thinking about my own journey, how law school was so challenging in the wrong ways. It wasn't the academics. It was just trying to figure out how I was supposed to get from A to B and just trying to find people who could help me navigate that path and how that continued into practice. It was really frustrating, to be honest, to realize years into my career that there was this thing called appellate work that I loved. And had I known earlier, you know, this is my rhythm. This is my work. I love it. It's so much better than trial work. It just suited me so much more. How many things I would have done differently earlier on if I had known that. If someone had just sat me down in law school and said, hey, you seem kind of nerdy. You like legal research and writing. You want to do impactful work. Have you heard about appellate practice? Right. And so I started talking to a lot of colleagues of color, and then talking to law students of color. Was their experience similar to mine? And just the patterns very quickly emerged. And so that led me to just think about, you know, are there other ways to address these systemic barriers that law students of color, especially those who are least represented in this space, who are first gen, coming from communities where they don't know lawyers, that we can sort of provide those same access and opportunities. You still have to work very hard. You still have to be a good legal researcher and writer, but so much of this is network-based and we don't talk about that. So much of this is just knowing basic information that students don't get access to. So that led to me developing these different programs. And eventually at the end of 2019, I realized if I was going to do this, I'd have to go full-time on it. So I left my job. I developed the organization for a year, and we launched in September 2020. And yeah, it's been amazing to see the response and to see the difference that it's made on the students already.
I admire your dedication. Oh my gosh. I mean, you're talking about turning this into essentially your life's work now. That's really incredible.
I really appreciate that. It's definitely been a whirlwind. I did not expect to launch this during a pandemic. So lots of interesting new challenges, but it's been a great experience. And I've loved getting to obviously work with the students. They're amazing, but also see the response from the appellate bar. That's been really affirming. And I think there's a lot of energy about wanting to do something about this that gives me hope.
When the stakes are high, decisions must be made quickly. And Court Surety Bond Agency is here to help. As the nation's leading surety agency specializing in supersedious bonds, CSBA can handle any size bond, ranging from a small temporary injunction bond to a billion-dollar appeal bond. If your client needs protection against judgment enforcement, contact CSBA or visit courtsurety.com today.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about what you do? I mean, there's the mentorship program, which I'm very happy I get to be part of the first class of that. I have loved it, and I'm not going to speak for my mentee, but I've gotten a whole lot out of it. And it's just been a really great experience. So there's that aspect. And then you also do some, I know you have kind of a partnership with Howard University. Is that right? And Well, I'll let you talk. Why don't I let you talk?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thrilled to have you in the mentorship program. We have a few lawyers from Texas, and we'd love to increase that because we have students who are based in Texas and want to work in Texas after graduation. So yeah, so we have our first program is a partnership with Howard University's Law School with their Civil Rights Clinic. We partnered with them to bring an appellate focus to it. So students work on civil rights appellate cases. It's led by two appellate attorneys, Tiffany Wright and Ed Williams. And in addition to building those substantive skills, students also get to meet appellate practitioners, you know, get guidance and mentorship. Our hope is that, you know, clinics being such an excellent way to get experience early on, there's never been one an HBCU, and there's often a lot of inequities in who ends up in these clinics. So we're very excited to partner with Howard, which really incubated civil rights appellate advocacy itself. Our second program is our outreach program. So one piece of that is the mentorship program you mentioned, where we pair law students of color who have a demonstrated interest in appellate practice with appellate practitioners. And throughout the program, we provide additional resources. So networking opportunities with the appellate bar, since as you were mentioning earlier, Jody, it's often a very insular group and hard to connect with folks sometimes, but you know, you don't know what you don't know. We want to make sure students know about different pathways and opportunities and are meeting people in the space. We do clerkship related events to try and support students as they navigate that process. Skill building workshops. So we've done a series of legal writing workshops. There's often a lot of inequities in how much writing experience you have coming into law school and the exposure you get. So just making sure they have those bread and butter skills. And then, you know, social events, getting to meet each other, getting to meet other folks in the space, connecting with judges, a opportunity for students to develop the holistic set of skills they need, but also feel encouraged if this is an area of practice they want to pursue, and conversely involve the appellate bar as well. We also do talks at law schools, you know, going back to you don't know what you don't know, we really try to target 1Ls and talk to affinity groups about appellate practice, the steps you should take with, you know, if it's something you're interested in. And then we do events that are more broadly aimed at the public that educate about issues that are happening in this space and the impact they have on communities of color. I think for me, one thing that really drives that is how if appellate work is messaged in law school, it's as if it's this academic area of practice that's, you know, issues of law that are very abstract and sort of theoretical, but the truth is they impact our everyday lives in the most personal ways, you know, how we are policed, our education, our immigration system, our voting ability, everything. And so, you know, we did an event, for example, a couple of weeks back with Judge Carlton Reeves about his opinion in Jameson v. McClendon on qualified immunity, which really traces the judicial origins of qualified immunity, its expansion and affirmance in the appellate space, and its disproportionate impact on Black lives. So really trying to start a discussion about why it's so important we have diverse representation in the appellate field and how it benefits all of us when we have that.
How structured is the mentorship part of the program? Do you have like an actual curriculum for the mentor and mentee to follow, or are you more just connecting them and letting them do their own thing?
We provide a mentorship handbook that gives suggested guidelines for how the mentor and mentee might want to communicate and get the most out of this partnership while they're paired together. But our students are, you know, 1Ls to 3Ls. We have some evening students who are 4Ls. They are from law schools across the country. They're coming at this from all different levels of experience. Some have, you know, heard about appellate work, think it's really interesting, love their legal writing class, but haven't had that much experience. Others have their clerkships already lined up and they are, you know, wanting to talk about really substantive legal issues. And it's just such a variety. So we've tried to provide an umbrella of guidance, but then leave it to the mentor and mentee to kind of adjust as is useful for both of them.
Unfortunately, it has to be a little bit flexible right now just because of the pandemic. It makes it really hard. You know, my mentee is at SMU, and even though we're, you know, not too far from one another, we haven't met in person because we really haven't had the chance to. So we've done a lot of virtual calls and hangouts and stuff, but we haven't actually met in person yet.
in normal times, Javeria, would it be an objective to try and match a mentor and mentee who are close to each other geographically, or is that kind of a non-issue anymore after COVID?
No, definitely. And I hope that we will be in a universe where folks can meet up in person soon. But I think that's really invaluable to have someone who's familiar with the appellate bar in their area, you know, who really we try to match as closely as we can folks who have, for example, connections through going to the same school so that the attorney can guide them through, you know, the unique situations of what that school's process might entail, or who have clerked in the area the student is in, et cetera. Or if there are students who have a very specific area of appellate work they're interested in, we try to connect folks based on that. It's a number of factors, but geographic is definitely a big consideration.
I can see some value in connecting a law student who has a desire to clerk for a particular court where the lawyer had the experience of clerking with that court and be kind of like a whole different track of judicial clerkship advising. But again, it comes back to, you know, they've got to know about that path. Then you have to match. I can only imagine the logistics on your end, the things that go on behind the scenes to try to match suitable mentors and mentees together. There's so many different variables that can play into it.
There were a lot of elaborate spreadsheets and whiteboards and post-its that looked a little crazy for a while during the matching process, for sure.
So how can we help? I mean, we in the sense of attorneys, judges, law schools, you know, anybody who's listening to this that has some connection to appellate law, what can they do if they want to help you?
I really appreciate that question. So I guess there's ways to get involved with us and then ways just more broadly. So I'd say for the Appellate Project, we are always looking for volunteers to be mentors, to do legal writing workshops, to join our networking events, judges who are interested in speaking with our students. One thing that I do through the mentorship program is share appellate opportunities, whether those are internships, you know, postgraduate fellowships. A lot of students are very eager for these, but don't know about them. So just making sure there's equitable dissemination of information. So if opportunities and you're trying to recruit and get the word out, you know, sending those along, we'd be happy to share them. And I just spreading the word about our work. We want to make sure that we are reaching as diverse a pool of appellate attorneys and judges as we can. And I mean that in every sense of the word. So, you know, a lot of our students of color are very eager to connect with people of color in the space, but we also want to make sure that we have folks who are in different geographic regions, who are in different areas of appellate practice. You know, being an appellate litigator can entail coming to DC and working at a firm's appellate practice group, but that's not the only way. And I think too often that's the only one that gets emphasized. So we want to make sure students know about the different pathways and different opportunities for this work. So just spreading the word and recruiting more folks to get involved is really valuable. And frankly, how this has gotten as far as it has so far, it's been very grassroots. So our website is theappellateproject.org. You can reach out through there if you want to get involved. And we're also on Twitter at @appellateproj, and would love to hear from anyone who's interested. More broadly, I would say going back to your point at the beginning, Jody, is just doing the work on individually on those uncomfortable conversations. You know, why does this room look this way? What is my role in this? What can I do? It's really on each of us individually to make those changes and have those conversations with ourselves and examine what we're doing and what we still can do. I think in appellate work, there's what I've seen is often this idea of meritocracy we rest ourselves on and reassure that we're just taking the best and brightest and this is the way that we identify them. But I'll tell you again and again, the truth is so much is network-based. And thinking about what qualities do I need for this work and how can I identify students who have those skills, it will expand your pool dramatically and get you all the highly qualified candidates who are out there, which, as we've mentioned, would really strengthen the system for all of us. So just doing that work internally, the last thing I'd say is don't underestimate the power that you have as an individual to make a difference. The power of being seen and encouraged is huge. It makes all the difference. Like I said before, if someone had just sat me down in law school and had that conversation about appellate work early on, it would have changed so many things for me. And that's true for a lot of students. So I think oftentimes we think of system changing a system is overwhelming, but a system is made of individuals, and we each have a very powerful role in that.
And so much of our issue has been there hasn't really been a pipeline, and you know, anybody can add to the pipeline at any step of the process just by, you know, not a whole lot of effort. And if enough people do it, then you really start to see significant change. So you're right. I mean, it can be individual actions that can have outsized impact, because if enough individuals come together, it does change the system, even though no one person had to do it by themselves.
Well, one thing that I've been asking myself, Javeri, as we've gone through this, is how this project is funded and what those of us in the legal community can do to help, not just in terms of the networking side, but on the financial side too.
Yeah, so we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Like I said, I launched this during a pandemic, not intentionally. So it's difficult to fundraise as a new nonprofit in a pandemic. I fully appreciate that folks are in totally different stages as far as their abilities. But if people are in a position where they can support, we rely primarily on individual donations. And I really got this off the ground by just going to friends and family and asking whatever little they could give to get, you know, have enough seed money to launch it. And we've continued that process. We've started outreach to firms as well. So if there are law firms who want to sponsor and get involved and partner with us more formally, we welcome that. And again, I encourage you to reach out through the website if you're at a law firm and are interested.
I understand the discomfort in talking about the financial side, but it's important. And, you know, that's one of the ways that we are interested in supporting what you're doing is by helping to get the word out for that kind of thing. So I appreciate your sort of sheepishness about talking about the money side, but it's critical and essential, you know, because what we're not hearing from you is, hey, I started this great project. I quit my job to do it. Please send me money. I think, you know, a lot of people can admire that. I do. So we're happy to help. You know, I think it's important for us and for the Texas Appellate Bar, for the Appellate Bar nationally, to support what you're doing, because it's an incredibly important cause. But, and yes, it's a pandemic. It's hard to raise money in these times, but you know, there are folks who are willing and able to do that. And so to the extent that we can use our network to help, you know, plug you into some people who are willing and able to contribute financially, we're happy to do it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
I'm going to end this with something that I don't usually do on this. It's a plea. And my plea is get involved, I would say, with the Appellate Project. I've had a fantastic experience in the mentorship program. And if you don't want to do that, get involved by donating. And if you don't want to do that, then just get involved in whatever you can do to improve diversity in appellate practice. And it could be as simple as sitting down and having an internal conversation with yourself about it and acknowledging that it is a problem, acknowledging that we as appellate practitioners are vested with an immense amount of privilege to be able to do what we do, and that we can share that privilege with a lot of people who don't have access to or understanding of what that system is. And it's going to improve it for all of us at every level, from the people being served by the justice system, the people involved in the justice system, law students, judges, attorneys. So take a little bit of time and reflect on what you can do, even if it's just to think about these issues and let them sit in your heart for a while. So that's the end of my speech. I'm going to get down off my soapbox and then we can conclude.
Well, I want to acknowledge what Jody said and support that 100%, because I'll acknowledge that I'm a first gen lawyer but I had a different perspective as an Anglo male, and a lot of folks of my ilk have a hard time understanding just how much more difficult it is for people who don't look like us. That not only applies to people of color, but to females. And we could have an ongoing debate on this show about whether women are actually in an advantage for civil appeals and civil appellate practice. But I think there is a completely different perspective on that that ought to be explored perhaps in another episode, because I think it's not the way that we see as white males. It's not the way we see it. And so I may self-edit some of this, but, you know, I'll be a little vulnerable there and say, you know, yes, we're seeing positive change, but it's not enough. And I really think that it needs to start within every institution that touches legal practice. You know, I think there are a lot of schools that are doing really good things, but I think there are schools that could do more. And if you want to turn out appellate lawyers and judges, you need to educate your entire student body on what it takes to get there. And I think having one single advisor in the law school who's kind of the contact person for judicial clerkships without a coordinated effort to try and recruit people into that track is not enough. And so if anybody takes offense at that, I'm really sorry, but not sorry. And I'll call out, you know, everybody who is in hiring positions in this system. Let's talk about judges. You're in a position, even if you're not a person of color, you're in a position to help impact this in a positive way and look at candidates, the candidates that come across your desk who compare favorably, you know, in every other way, please give them due consideration. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think firms have really taken very positive strides on this, but perhaps one issue with the firms is feeling like there's not always a great choice of candidates to choose from, but that goes falls back on the other institutions because you have to feed that pipeline. So I think between the schools, the judges, and the firms, and I'll go ahead and toss out, I'll call out bar associations too while I'm at it, since this is one of my particular areas of interest. I think bar associations, you know, developing leaders across the board, whatever practice area it may be, is super important. And so if we want to achieve something approaching equity across practice areas, across firm sizes, we really need to be thinking about, all right, how can we make the bar, firms, schools, every place more closely resemble what the actual population looks like? And if we're able to keep that principle in mind, I think we can take some really serious steps in the right direction. That's a little more soapbox than usually anyone gets, but you know, I can't let Jody be the only one who gets to step on the soapbox today. Javeria, you've been very gracious with your time, and I've certainly enjoyed the conversation and learning more about what you're doing. I knew about it, but not nearly enough, and now I feel much better educated about it. We're certainly pleased to support the Appellate Project here on our podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, presented by Butler Snow. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend it to your colleagues or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate everyone who has rated the show and otherwise supported us so far. To stay in touch, suggest topics, ask questions, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or tweet us at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.